Here's what's coming up on today's show.
It can create not just the tax that you're anticipating on that particular distribution, but it can create IRMA taxes or there's other thresholds and things that you can reach that can really cause some problems in retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Cafe with certified financial planners Dan Reese and Brent Oliver. At our cafe, we believe your retirement plan should be life-giving and custom-made, just like a hot cup of coffee. Here in mid-Michigan, with an office in Jackson, the Retirement Cafe is open for business.
Hello, glad to have you on the Retirement Cafe alongside Dan Reese and Brent Oliver, certified financial planners over at Avery Wealth. I am Ben George, and we have a good show for you today. We're going to go through some of the most common tax questions that get asked to Dan and Brent by both pre-retirees and retirees. So welcome in, Dan and Brent. This is an interesting topic. I know we've done a previous episode on some common retirement questions, but do you get a lot of questions around taxes in retirement?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, not as many, like you say, as we should.
Yeah. I think a lot of times people don't think that they're going to have a tax problem in retirement. I think they think, you know, I'm done working a lot, you know, I'm probably going to pay a lot less in taxes the rest of my life. And that's really not the case in a lot of situations, especially for good savers.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is that if you look at our tax system, the way that people approach taxes, right? So if you, the majority of Americans, whether they do their taxes themselves or whether they go to a CPA or other tax preparer, it's kind of interesting because it's like the year's over. They collect everything when they get it in, you know, February, March, record everything.
Right.
And it's kind of like, oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Right. So like, that's just, it's not a controllable outcome.
Right.
You know, and they might get a little thing like the CPA might say, hey, you should increase this or fund an IRA, but it's really simple.
Right.
And so don't you think overall people kind of get to a point where they just throw their hands up like it is what it is?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people think that the real tax planning is just for ultra wealthy people that figure out a way to pay no tax, right, is the idea, which probably isn't the case. But they do have great strategies a lot of times, but those are available to families in retirement that are really good savers.
Yeah, I think the good thing is nowadays technology has come so far. You know, it used to be very difficult to project out what somebody's taxes might look like for the next 10, 20 years. And there's a lot of variables for sure, but at least now we have tools where we can get an idea. And that helps when you can start seeing what it looks like based on what you're currently doing. Then you can start playing with scenarios and say, well, what if we did this,
right?
And so this will be fun today, just talking a little bit about some of the questions that we get out there, and hopefully that'll help you understand that there are things that many people can do to improve their situation.
Well, great. Well, let's get started here with this first question, which is one that I like, because I know there's a lot of misinformation out there about Social Security, but are Social Security benefits taxable?
We do get this question a lot, and there is a lot of misconception on it. And you're going to hear this answer a lot today, and it depends.
Right.
Because it does. But I will say this, the vast majority, and anybody who's been a really good saver throughout their working career in retirement is very, very likely to pay taxes on their Social Security. So the answer is most likely yes.
Yeah, and just to kind of a precursor to what, you know, Brent was saying is that there used to be no. Like when Social Security started, it wasn't taxable. And then they found a way to like tax like up to 50% of it. And a few years later, like that works so well, let's just go ahead and tax up to 85%. Yes. We'll get into that a little bit, but it can, you know, up to 85% of your benefit can be taxed. Now, here's the thing people get confused about. That's not an 85% tax.
Right, right. So 85% of your benefit could be subject to income tax.
Yes.
15% of it, no matter what, is not going to be subject to income tax is what that means.
Yeah.
So, because I know you've had this situation too, or we're meeting with somebody in the conference room or something, and you say that, well, 85% of it could be subject to tax, and people's eyes get huge. Like, what? 85% tax?
I'm not going to have anything left. So it is. And by the way, it's taxes. It's confusing.
It is. It always is confusing. But there's... we can talk really at a high level about this, but there's something called your provisional income is what we're talking about here. And that's basically your modified adjusted gross income plus half of your Social Security benefit plus plus any tax exempt interest would be added back in. Whatever that number is, depending on how high it is, if it's below a certain threshold, then you wouldn't pay any tax mm-hmm. on your Social Security. And then there's a middle range, and then which is 50% tax, and a high range, which is 85% tax. We don't need to get into a lot of this.
Yeah, I mean, it gets really deep. But like Brent's saying, the thing you got to remember, take half your Social Security, and for most people, your other income.
Yep.
Total it up. If you're married and it's over $32,000, you know, you're going to start seeing a good chunk of it taxed.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really the end.
Yeah. So think about that, $32,000, and you're going to be subject to tax. So, like I said, most people are going to have an income that's above $32,000 for married filing jointly.
Yeah. And just to make you feel even better, they haven't changed that in years.
Yeah.
It's been $32,000, like $25,000 for single, $32,000 for married. The lower is like 25. It's, what is it, 32? Yeah. Anyway, there's numbers for single and married for the different brackets, but they've never changed that I'm aware of, like when they created it. And so it's basically captures more people every year, you know.
Got it. Okay. Well, just know that that is a possibility. So if you are curious about that and want to see what that could look like, you always want to reach out to your advisor. All right. Another question retirees are asking, why did my Medicare premiums go up so much?
This might be one of the most frustrating ones that people come in, and we get calls every once in a while. What happened? I got this letter and my Medicare premiums just shot way up.
So you're probably thinking, well, this is a tax question and answer. Why are we talking about Medicare? But really what we're talking about here is something that's called IRMA. Complicated tax.
This is not a hurricane. Right? This is not a hurricane.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So income related to monthly adjustment amounts is what that stands for. And it's a surtax, basically, that is placed on your Medicare premiums once you exceed a certain threshold of income.
Yeah, which is like, it can be really frustrating because the other thing that's really hard to understand is it's actually based on your income from 2 years before, because just the way that they charge Medicare premiums, it's when they have your last tax return.
Right.
You know, really. So that's why it's your income from 2 years before. Sometimes people don't even remember what their income was 2 years before.
Right. So when you're 65, for example, your income in that particular year wouldn't be applied till you're 67 in this example. And so you'd get a notice that said, and when you were 65, your income was above the threshold and we're going to charge you a surcharge on your Medicare premium.
Yep.
And you're really happy about that usually.
Yeah, because like typically Medicare Part B is about $170.
That's so what
like,
it is in 2022.
Yeah, for this year. So like if you are just getting the standard Medicare charge, and so if you're taking Social Security, it just comes right out of your Social Security check. If you're not, you get a quarterly bill for that. So if say you're 65, you go on Medicare, and you haven't taken Social Security yet, you'd get a bill and you'd have to pay it quarterly, right?
Yep.
But it can go up much higher, can't it, Brent?
Yeah, so the premiums, Dan just mentioned 170 is what that base is that the majority of families are paying. Once you get up to higher income levels, you can pay as much as $578 a month, right? So that's a big tax, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about $400, more than $400 a month.
Yeah.
Right. So we're talking about $5,000 a year, basically, in surcharges. So it's really important to understand this, right? And that doesn't include also there are some adjustments on Part D as well. So that's your Part B adjustment. You could also pay surcharges, or you will, on whatever your premium is for Part D.
So Part D, just a reminder, is a prescription coverage. And by the way, the numbers that Brent, I don't want to brighten up your day too much, but the numbers he gave were per person.
Yes.
So if you're married, you could literally be paying up to almost, or basically $10,000 extra a year if your income was high enough.
Yes. So you, again, it's really important to understand these thresholds because it doesn't go from 170 to 578, right?
Right.
There's different numbers in between, and there's different income thresholds that you'd hit, but we're not going to go into all those different ones.
Yeah, and the only reason we bring that up is like, you know, Roth conversions have become really popular, and there's a lot of value to them depending on your situation, but sometimes people miss that. They're like, oh, because they don't think of it as income to them.
Right.
They're like, well, I didn't take any income. I just converted that to a Roth. Your tax return, that shows as income, as money comes out of your pre-tax retirement account. So all of a sudden, that can push you up there. So you really have to be careful when you start making these choices on things like Roth conversions.
Yeah, and this is where people really that aren't working with a qualified professional can really get themselves into trouble because, you know, they're taking way more than they need out of an IRA, for example, or something like that. And it can create not just the tax that you're anticipating on that particular distribution, but it can create IRMA taxes or there's other thresholds and things that you can reach that can really cause some problems in retirement.
Yep.
Well, that is really good to know. So unexpected income or things like a Roth conversion might cost you more than just the income tax.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're saying is you just got to be really careful on that is you could have some unintended consequences. And,
yes.
And, you know, there's lots of things out there. I mean, just real quickly, since we're on healthcare, just to quickly mention, people that retire that are on the, you know, the healthcare exchange, it's kind of similar. Like all of a sudden, your income that you have in that year can, you know, seriously impact what you pay in premiums for healthcare there.
Yeah.
Which is in essence kind of like a tax, right?
So, oh, absolutely. Because that subsidy, depending on your income level, is reduced the higher your income goes until it's just gone.
Yeah.
Right. So people get big subsidies mm-hmm. in those things, hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month. And then if your income goes up too high, you could lose that.
And that's really what's happening in the IRMA too, because really the high rate is the full cost. People are getting subsidized in essence.
Right.
Because, you know, the 170 is not enough to cover the cost. Right. For most, so.
Well, that brings us to our next question that we hear, which is a Roth conversion. So what is that, and should you be considering it?
Yeah, Roth conversions, basically it's a simple concept. Like most people save or have saved throughout the years into pre-tax accounts. 401ks have been pre-tax. They now have some Roth options, but for many years it was a pre-tax only. A lot of the tools that people use to save for retirement, they'd get the tax deduction when they put it in, which means the tax bill is due at the other end, right,
right,
Brent?
Right. So, yeah, it reduces your taxable income in the year that you contribute it, but then when you take it out, you pay income tax. And the Roth is just the opposite. So when you're in the year that you make the contribution, you don't get any tax benefit from that. But then from that point on, your Roth grows tax-free. So the contribution plus the gains are all tax-free.
Yeah.
There's some rules there, but
yeah.
That's the general idea and the difference between a pre-tax account and a Roth account.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because real quick on that, we were talking earlier about like Social Security taxation. That's one advantage of most of your money's in Roth. When you pull that out, it doesn't count.
Right.
So that can be really helpful for Social Security taxation.
Yeah, because somebody who had all Roth money, say that's all you had in Social Security, well, your income's probably never going to even cross the threshold that would have any of it taxed.
Yeah,
right?
It can be pretty amazing. But so the Roth conversion is simply the process of taking money out. So taking money out of the pre-tax account and putting it into the Roth account. They allow you to do that. And basically, as you pull it out, you're paying income tax based on your income level. So it's all depends on where you are on the tax table. But then once it's in the Roth IRA, then it grows tax-free moving forward. That's right. All a conversion is, right?
Yep. It's just moving it from one place to the other. And like we just talked about, it's really important to have this be part of your plan, right? You just don't want to randomly do it because there's a lot of things that can happen with your taxes that you may not be considering. But there's a lot of good reasons to do these. You know, what do you think are some of the best reasons to do them?
Well, I mean, one of the things is that if you're in a low tax rate early in retirement, sometimes you can do that. I mean, it could be when you're younger too, by the way. We talk about retirement, but you could be 35 and you have a couple of kids and your income tax rate's low. You could do one then, for sure. But the idea is that you want to think of the idea of paying the tax at a lower rate than what it might be down the road, right?
Exactly.
So like the advantage is if I can fill up my 12% tax bracket as an example and pay 12% and then have it paid off. So like I always try to explain it like this. If you converted $50,000 and then the account, you know, and you had to pay, let's just keep it simple, you had to pay 10%. You know, so it's $5,000 in taxes, right? But then the account over time grew to $100,000. Well, you've already paid your tax.
Right.
So you think about it, instead of paying 10%, you really only paid 5% as that account's grown, right? Now, on the downside, you lost some money that would have been in there, right? Because you had to pay the tax. But generally speaking, over time, that can be really powerful. A couple other things, too, is leaving in tax-free money to heirs.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what happens if you inherit a Roth?
Well, this is a huge deal, in my opinion, because if you inherit pre-tax, right, your heirs assume the same, basically, tax status of that account. So when you inherit, you have 10 years as the person who inherited that money to get it out and pay income tax on it. So think about your kids or whoever else you're leaving this money to. They're going to be probably in some of their prime earning years, and now they're going to be forced to be taking big distributions from an IRA because they have to get it out in 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's going to drive their tax rate up. Well, what happens if you inherit that Roth account is that there is no tax. Now, you still have that same 10-year schedule, but you can get 10 more years of growth tax-free on that money.
Then take it out with no tax.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think is kind of missed a lot of times, but we see it because of what we do with our planning, you have a lot more control with your money when it's in a Roth versus a pre-tax account. And what I mean by that is at 72, you have to pull money out of a pre-tax account and it's taxable. So oftentimes what occurs, it's like a tax time bomb. You know, people don't need it. They don't need it. And it grows and grows. And then their required distribution is substantial. It pushes them into higher tax brackets. They have no control. It's very frustrating. Well, Roth money, little known secret, you don't ever have a required distribution.
Right.
So like it doesn't, and even if you do take money out, it doesn't affect your taxes on other stuff. So it's like from a control perspective, the Roth can be very, very powerful.
Yeah, it sounds like a Roth conversion can be a great strategy under the right circumstances. So something to keep in mind there. All right, the fourth question that's commonly asked by retirees is, what account should I take income from first once I'm in retirement?
Great question.
This is one of the best, right? I mean, I love this question because really, if you are a pre-retiree or just starting retirement, this is the biggest question that you should be asking yourself is, you know, how am I going to create income out of the resources that I have?
Yeah, and I would tell you that this is probably where the most money is lost long-term. Is these early years of retirement, because it's complicated. I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. This stuff is not simple whatsoever. It takes a lot of thought. Oftentimes it might take like, you know, a CPA and a certified financial planner even getting together to figure out what is the optimal way for this family to create income out of the resources they have. But what occurs so often is that people, give you a common example, they retire. Hey, I'm retiring. I got to start my Social Security. Oh, I'm going to take this money. I've got this money in the bank to get me through the first couple of years. Then I've got a little bit of Roth money that I'll use, and then I'll dip into my 401k.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, that's not the best option.
No, but you can understand why somebody falls into that trap, right? Mm-hmm. Because almost, you talked about it earlier today, like a lot of times when people are doing their taxes, they're thinking about, I don't want to pay the tax man this year, right? Like, how much am I going to owe? They're stressed about it. And the whole goal is always to pay the least amount of tax. Well, the scenario that you just said, if you have a bunch of money in the bank and you take it out, you have no tax,
right?
You're not. And so you're like, man, I just had my first year of retirement and I had zero taxes due. Like, I won.
Yeah,
right.
It's the water cooler expert.
Yeah,
it's the guy around the cooler. It's like, I don't even pay any taxes.
Right. Yeah. Which is, I mean, and you, if you didn't think it through, you would think that you really did win. It's like, man, I got through a year and I didn't owe the government a thing.
Yep.
Right. But what we know is that that doesn't really probably work out very well in the long term.
I always say, pay now or pay later.
Yeah.
Because taxes are no different than like if you take a car loan, right? If you forget about the low interest environment we've lived in for the last few years, but in normal times, let's say a car loan's 6%. Well, you can take your time, right, and pay a less amount each year than paying the whole car by writing a check. But do you pay more or less long term?
More.
You pay more, right?
Yeah.
Because you've got interest and everything else. Well, you know, the reality, that's the same with taxes. Like oftentimes people defer taxes because they think, oh, I don't want to pay till I have to. But it actually ends up costing you a lot more than what it would otherwise. And like we talked about before, sometimes it limits options. And the third thing that can happen is it can actually put a lot more stress on your retirement income plan. And that's the one thing we don't want.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So instead, you should be looking at all of your resources, right? And we talk about this all the time on the show, but pensions, Social Security, different savings, different types of accounts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Taxable accounts, pre-tax accounts, Roth accounts. And then you want to kind of put those all together and figure out, how can I maximize all of these together, mm-hmm. right? Not only to give me the income that I need to live on, right?
Yeah.
That's number one. But then also, and do it in the most tax-efficient manner possible.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And you can do it. I mean, that's the thing. That's a takeaway for everybody listening. Like, it can be done. We do it every day.
Right. And so I did like a quick example of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just going to give you a couple of numbers. And it's every time we do, we do this every day. But when you see it, it's just unbelievable,
oh, yeah.
right? So this particular family has about $1.6 million in investable assets, right? Mm-hmm. They've got a pension, both have Social Security, right? And then they have the $1.6 million. They need about $8,000 a month in spendable income,
mm-hmm.
right? And so their plan's very sustainable, and their portfolio will support a little over $10,000 in income. So remember, we talked a little bit about guardrails in previous episodes. Like, that's kind of what their portfolio would support. And then if conditions were to change in the market, maybe they'd have to take a pay cut. Most likely that they would be taking more increases than pay cuts. But anyways, when we run this and we optimize it, so we look at the one scenario that Dan gave where they're using the money in the bank first, and then they're using maybe their Roth and their pre-tax. We ran that. We call that conventional wisdom. We run that versus a tax-optimized plan. Now, this family's not spending any less. They're doing everything that they want to do, right? They're getting that same income. We can change their lifetime tax rate by 7.7% per year.
That's incredible.
It is. So the strategy that you talked about, their average tax rate would have been around 20, just under 23%. We can get it done at 15.
Same income.
Right? Same income, right? They pay $1.5 million less in taxes over their lifetime.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And not only that, but their net worth at the end of their plan is up $1.4 million, and it's super tax efficient when they pass it to their heirs.
Yeah, it's $1.4 million like on their statements, but because the taxes, a lot right. of it's already been paid, their heirs are getting almost all that versus like 30%
right.
less
right.
or something.
Yeah,
like
they're actually in this scenario, it's all Roth or after-tax money, so there's no tax due on the money that's being inherited. The old way, all of it would pretty much be pre-tax, so the government would have a right to probably 25% of that money.
Uncle Sam loves pre-tax retirement accounts.
Yes.
Uncle Sam gets, it's like a lifetime annuity.
Yeah.
So
you, I mean, if you think about, I mean, that totally changes somebody's scenario.
Yeah.
$1.5 million difference in taxes alone.
Yeah, that money's going somewhere, we always say.
Right.
You choose.
Right.
Do you want to go to Uncle Sam? We don't yep. have to go to your family.
And in this scenario, there's Roth conversion, so they're prepaying some of the tax, and then they get the growth from there on out, right? They're not sharing that growth with the government. It makes a huge difference.
Yep.
Does make a huge difference. And, you know, just that decision on where you take the money from sounds like it can have a major impact on your taxes and your overall success in retirement. So it's very interesting. All right, let's wrap up with a logistical question on taxes then. So, you know, when you're working, taxes are withheld from your paycheck. So how do you pay for taxes once you're retired?
It's a good question, because actually, this is one of those things that Brent and I sometimes forget to like talk with clients about.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, oh, you just do this and that. Well, you've never been retired before.
Right.
You don't know the answer. That's right. Why it's such a good question.
Yeah, because right? a lot of times people don't. I mean, we just talked about ways to create income. Like, people don't know how to do that. They also don't know how to pay their taxes. So typically speaking, you have a couple of different options, right? So think of your pensions and Social Security. Well, you can set it up when you're making your elections, or even after the fact, to have taxes withheld, just like
yep.
you do on your paycheck. So your benefit was going to be $3,000, and you're going to withhold 5%, 10%, whatever percent tax you're going to withhold. They withhold it. They pay it to the IRS, and that's taken care of for you. Right. That's
yeah.
one way. Same thing with your investments.
Yeah.
Right. So with our clients here, we figure out what's an appropriate amount of tax to have withheld from those distributions. and we withhold the tax.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it works well, and it's like you're used to when you're working. When you take all the information at the end of the year when you prepare your taxes and you say, hey, you know, hopefully the numbers are fairly close for what was withheld and what you owe, so you're pretty close to break even, right? Maybe you get a few bucks back, maybe you owe a couple of bucks when you file your taxes. And the other way is, and usually this is what we see when people are working with CPAs, if they would prefer to not do any withholding and just pay their taxes quarterly. So like that's an option. So like, and the quarters aren't on the quarter. It's actually, it's April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and January 15th. So it's a little bit odd from traditional quarters. But basically what happens is like your CPA or whoever's helping you with taxes, or if you're doing them yourself, will kind of calculate, hey, based on what you're doing, this is going to be your tax bill. So you just write one quarter of it to the state and to the feds, you know, those four times. And same thing, when you do your taxes, you're like, this is what was paid in. And, you know, you may still owe something or get a little refund. But those are the two key ways to do it.
Well, very good. A lot of great information there. And I know we've covered a lot of retiree tax questions today. So can you give us a recap of some of the key points and takeaways as we close out?
Yeah, I mean, tax planning overall is just a big part of a successful retirement plan. And hopefully some of the things we answered today are things that you've had questions about, or maybe you didn't think about it before. Because like I say, and Brent and I were talking about, most people don't really know you can do anything. Like, you can't make a difference. And so when you're making choices with investments, with your retirement income, it all factors into your taxes. So you want to make sure you're thinking about that. There's nothing worse than, you know, basically taking actions, you know, without thinking about the tax ramifications and then getting something like that Medicare increased premium bill that you didn't expect. So you just really have to be aware of those things. And overall, this stuff is extremely complicated. You know, having a good CPA, a good certified financial planner, and oftentimes if they can work together, they can really help you make good choices. And, you know, the thing is with taxes that we've heard people say over and over again is, the thing I don't want is a surprise. Like, number one, take control of it, of get rid of the surprises. And if you can do things like the example Brent was giving to get the same income and really knock your tax bill down dramatically throughout your retirement, I don't see a downside to that. I think that's something everybody should be thinking about.
Always great insight as usual. And if you have any tax questions on your mind that we didn't get to today, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can always contact Dan and Brent over at Avery Wealth by visiting averywealth.com, or you can call them at 517-783-1695. But these tax questions are so very important. You always want to keep as much money as possible in your own pocket and for your family. So doing this the correct way will help you accomplish that. So Dan and Brent, as always, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Avery Wealth, Inc. is a registered investment advisor registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration as an investment advisor does not imply a certain level of skill or training, and the content of this communication has not been approved or verified by the SEC or by any state securities authority. The information contained in this podcast is intended to provide general information about Avery Wealth and its services. It is not intended to offer investment advice. Investment advice will only be given after a client engages our services by executing the appropriate investment services agreement. Information regarding investment products and services are provided solely to read about our investment philosophy and our strategy. You should not rely on any information provided on our website in making investment decisions. Market data, articles, and other content in this podcast are based on generally available information and are believed to be reliable. Avery Wealth does not guarantee the accuracy of the information contained in this podcast. Avery Wealth will provide all prospective clients with a copy of our current form ADV Part 2A disclosure brochure prior to commencing an advisory relationship. However, at any time, you can view our current form ADV Part 2A at advisorinfo.sec.gov. In addition, you can contact us to request a hard copy.